I'm not going to kiss you again, just in case that's what you were thinking this would lead to. Who what now? The jackass. Gaping at him, I whisper hiss, I would honestly rather lick the bottom of my shoe than have your mouth on mine again. He turns back, looking out the window. The van pulls away from the curb, the driver cues up the mellow island music, and I am ready for a 20-minute nap when, in front of us, a teenager pulls a bottle of sunscreen out and begins liberally spraying it down one arm and then the other. Ethan and I are immediately lost in a cloud of oily fumes with no window or door. He and I exchange a look of deep suffering.
Please don't spray that in the van,
Ethan says, with a gentle authority that does something weird and wavy to my breathing. The teen turns, gives us a flat, oops, sorry, and then tucks the bottle back in her backpack. Beside her, her father is absorbed in a popular science magazine, completely oblivious. The fog of sunscreen slowly clears, and aside from the view of Sophie and Billy making out two rows ahead of us, we are able to see out the windows. To the view of the snaking shoreline to our left, the brilliant green mountains to our right, a pulse of fondness fills me. Maui is so pretty. I feel Ethan turn to look down at me, but don't meet his eyes, in case he's confused that my words were delivered without insult to him. His frown could ruin this flash of happiness I'm feeling.
It is.
I don't know why I always expect an argument from him, but it continually surprises me when I get agreement instead. And his voice is so deep, it almost feels like a seduction. Our eyes meet and then dart apart, but unfortunately our attention lands directly ahead of us, between the heads of the sunscreen teen and her father, where Sophie and Billy are schmoopy murmuring to each other with their faces only millimeters apart.
When did you two break up?
I ask quietly. He looks like he's not going to answer, but then exhales.
About 6 months ago.
And she's already engaged? I let out a soft whistle.
Yeesh. I mean, as far as she knows, I'm married, so I can't be too hurt about it.
You can be as hurt as you want, but you don't have to seem hurt, I say, and when he doesn't answer, I realize I've hit the nail on the head. He's struggling to pretend to be unaffected.
For what it's worth, I whisper, Billy looks like a tool. He's the understudy version of Redis, without any of the scary sexy charm. This version just looks oily.
Ethan grins down at me before seeming to remember that we don't like each other's faces. His smile straightens.
They're just up there making out. There are like 8 other people in this van. I can see their tongues. It's gross.
I bet Ethan Thomas has never been inappropriate like that.
I mean, he says, frowning, I like to think I can be affectionate, but some things are infinitely better when they happen behind closed doors.
Heat engulfs whatever words remain in my head, and I nod in agreement. The idea of Ethan doing unknown, hot things behind closed doors makes everything inside my body turn to goo. I clear my throat, relieved when I look away, take a deep breath, and the goo dissolves. Dear Olive Torres, this is Ethan. He is not swoony. Ethan leans in a little, catching my eye.
You think you can bring it today?
Bring it?
The fake wife game.
What's in it for me? I ask. Ethan taps his chin.
How about I don't tell your boss you're a liar?
Okay, fair. Brainstorming what I can do to help him win the nebulous best new partner war I suspect we're fighting with Sophie and Billy, I lean in, meeting him halfway. I don't want to get your hopes up or anything, but I look really great in this bikini. There's no revenge like being with someone new who has a great rack. His lip curls.
What an empowering feminist statement.
I can appreciate my body in a bikini and still want to set fire to the patriarchy. I look down at my chest. Who knew what a little meat on my bones would do?
Is that what you meant at check-in? About losing your job and baking?
Yeah, I'm a stress baker. I pause. And eater. I mean, obviously, you know that.
He stares at me for a couple of loaded seconds before he says,
You've got a job now. Your baking days can be behind you if you want.
When I look up, he glances quickly away from my boobs. If I didn't definitively know better, I might think he was hoping I'd keep up the baking just a little while longer. Yes, I have a job, assuming I can keep it.
We got through last night, didn't we? He says. You'll keep the job.
And maybe the rack, too. He reddens a little, and the sign of his discomfort gives me life. But then his eyes do another tiny dip over the front of my cover-up, almost like he can't help himself.
You had no problem looking in the Skittle dress. To be fair, it was a bit like you were wearing a fluorescent light bulb. It drew the eyes.
After all this, I'm going to have something made for you out of that dress, I promise him. A tie, maybe. Some sexy briefs.
He chokes a little, shaking his head. After a few beats of silence, he confides,
I had actually just been remembering that Sophie almost got implants when we were together. She always wanted bigger.
He mimes cupping boobs. You can say it, I tell him.
Say what?
Breasts, boobs, jugs, knockers. Ethan wipes a hand down his face.
Jesus, Oliver.
I stare at him, daring him to look at me. Finally, he does, and he looks like he wants to crawl out of his skin.
So she wanted implants, I prompt.
He nods.
I bet she regrets not getting them back when she was enjoying my paychecks.
Well, there you go. Your fake new wife has great boobs. Be proud.
Hesitating, he says,
But it has to be more than that.
What do you mean, more than that? I'm not going to wear a thong.
No, just...
He runs an exasperated hand through his hair.
It's not only about me being with someone hot now.
Wait, what? Hot? He rolls on like he hasn't said anything completely shocking.
You have to pretend to like me, too.
A curl falls over his eye just after he's said this, turning the moment into a Hollywood shot that completely mocks me. A small set of fireworks, only a sparkler, I swear, goes off beneath my breastbone, because he is so goddamn pretty. And seeing him vulnerable, even for a second, is so disorienting it makes me imagine a time when I can look at his face and not hate it.
I can pretend to like you.
I pause, adding out of the self-preservation instinct, probably. Something softens in his demeanor. His hand moves closer, curling around mine, warm and encompassing. My reflex is to jerk away, but he holds me steady, gently, and says,
Good, because we're going to have to be a lot more convincing on that boat.
Chapter 8. The boat in question is enormous, with a wide lower deck, a plush indoor area with a bar and grill, and an upper rooftop deck in the full bright sun. While the rest of the group finds places to stow their bags and get snacks, Ethan and I head straight for the bar, grab drinks, and make our way up the ladder to the empty rooftop. I'm sure the emptiness won't last, but the tiny reprieve from feeling like we're performers on stage is awesome. It's warm. I take off my cover-up. Ethan takes off his shirt, and then we're both half-naked together, in broad daylight, drowning in silence. We look at anything but each other. Suddenly, I wish we were surrounded by people. Nice boat, I say.
Yeah.
How's your drink?
He shrugs.
Cheap liquor. It's fine.
Wind whips my hair into my face, and Ethan holds my vodka tonic while I pull a rubber band out of my bag and tie my hair up. His eyes dart from the horizon to my red bikini and back again.
I saw that, I say.
He sips his drink.
Saw what?
You checked out my chest.
Of course I did. It's like having two other people up here with us. I don't want to be rude.
As if on cue, a head pops up at the top of the ladder. Fucking reject Daryl Dixon, of course, followed closely by Sophie. I swear I can hear Ethan's soul scream. They climb onto the deck, holding their own margaritas in plastic cups. "Hey, guys," Sophie says, approaching. "Oh my God, isn't it gorge?" "So gorge," I agree, ignoring Ethan's horrified expression. No way he's judging me any harder than I'm judging myself. We stand together, the world's unlikeliest foursome, and I attempt to diffuse the uncomfortable tension between us. "So, Billy, where did you two meet?" Billy squints up into the sun. "At the grocery store."
"Billy is assistant manager at a Cub Foods in St. Paul," Sophie says. "He was stocking school supplies, and I was buying paper plates across the aisle."
I wait, assuming there will be more. There isn't. The silence stretches on until Ethan comes to the rescue.
"The one on Clarence, or..."
"Uh-uh."
She hums around her straw, shaking her head as she swallows.
"Arcade."
"I don't usually go there," I say. More silence. "I like the one on University."
"Good produce department at that one," Ethan agrees.
Sophie stares at me for a few seconds, and then looks at Ethan.
"She looks like Dane's girlfriend."
My stomach drops, and inside my cranium, my brain takes the shape of Munch's The Scream. Of course Sophie would have met Amy. Individually, Ethan and I are above-average intelligent people, so why are we so stupid together? I send him a barrage of panicked brainwaves, but he just nods calmly.
"Yeah, they're twins."
Billy lets out an impressed, "Dude." But Sophie is clearly less excited by the potential for homemade pornos.
"Isn't that sort of weird?" she asks.
I want to shout, "Yes, very. All of this is very weird." But manage to clamp my mouth to my straw and drain about half of my drink. After a long pause of his own, Ethan says,
"Not really."
A seagull flies overhead. The boat rocks as we push through the waves. I reach the bottom of my drink and loudly suck watery air through my straw until Ethan elbows me in the side. This is so painful. Eventually, Sophie and Billy decide it's time to sit and make their way to a padded bench directly across the deck from where we're standing. Close enough that we're very clearly sharing the same general space, but far enough that we no longer have to attempt conversation, or hear whatever disgusting thing Billy is currently whispering in Sophie's ear. Ethan clamps an arm around my shoulder in a clunky, robotic sign of, "We are also affectionate." Again, he was so much smoother last night. With ease, I reach up, sliding my hand around his waist. I'd forgotten he was shirtless, and my palm makes contact with his bare skin. Ethan stiffens a little beside me, so I lean in fully, stroking his hip bone with my thumb. I'd intended to do it to needle him, but actually, it's nice. His skin is sun-warmed, firm, distracting. It's like having a single bite of something delicious. I want to go back for more. The point of contact where my thumb touches his hip is suddenly the hottest part of my body. With a cheesy growl, Billy pulls Sophie onto his lap, and she kicks her feet up, giggling and petite. After a stretch of silence during which I really should have seen it coming, Ethan sits too, jerking me down onto his thighs. I fall far less gracefully, far less petite, and let out a burp when I land.
"What are you doing?" I ask under my breath.
"God, I don't know," he whispers, pained. "Just go with it."
"I can feel your penis."
He shifts beneath me.
"This was so much easier last night."
"Because you weren't invested."
"Why is she up here?"
he hisses.
"There's an entire boat."
"You guys are so cute over there," Sophie calls, smiling. "So chatty."
"So chatty,"
Ethan repeats, smiling through clenched teeth.
"Can't get enough of each other."
"Totally,"
I add, and make it even worse by giving a double thumbs up. Sophie and Billy look so natural at this. We, however, do not. It was one thing in the restaurant last night with Mr. Hamilton, where we had our own chairs and some degree of personal space. But here, my sunscreen-slicked legs slide all over Ethan's, and he has to adjust me again. I'm sucking in my stomach, and my thighs are shaking from the restraint it's taking to not lean my full weight into him. As if sensing this, he pulls me back into his chest, trying to get me to relax.
"Is this comfortable?"
he mumbles. "No. I am acutely conscious of every donut I've ever eaten in my entire life."
"Turn sideways."
"What?"
"Like..."
He guides both of my legs to the right, helping me curl into his chest.
"Better?"
"I mean, yes, it is better. Whatever." He stretches his arms across the deck railing, and gamely, I wrap an arm around his neck, trying to look like someone who enjoys frequent sex with him. When I glance up, he's just looking up from my chest again. Very subtle. He looks away, blushes, and an electric zap travels down my neck.
"They are pretty great, you know,"
he finally admits. "I know.
They do look better in this than in the Skittle dress."
"Your opinion is so important to me." I shift, wondering why I'm so flushed. "And I can feel your penis again."
"Of course you can,"
he says with a tiny wink.
"It'd be hard not to."
Is that a size joke or a boner joke?
Definitely a size joke, Orville.
I take a final watery sip of my drink and then exhale directly into his face so that he winces from the fumes of cheap vodka. Squinting, he says,
"You're a real seductress."
"I hear that a lot." He coughs, and I swear I see Ethan Thomas battling a genuine smile. And I get it. As much as I hate him, I think I'm starting to like us. "Have you ever snorkeled?" I ask.
"Yes."
"Do you like it?"
"Yes."
"Are you usually better at conversations than you are with me?"
"Yes."
We fall back into silence, but we are so close, and across the deck there's only the wet sounds of Sophie and Billy making out. Ethan and I can't not talk. "What's your favorite drink?" He looks at me with pained patience, growling.
"Do we have to do this?"
I nod over toward Ethan's ex and her new fiancé, who look like they're only seconds away from dry humping.
"Would you rather watch them, or we could make out?"
"Kuiperine Huss," he answers.
"You?"
"I'm a margarita girl. But if you like Kuiperine Huss, there's a place a couple miles from my apartment that makes the best ones I've ever had."
"We should go there," he says,
and it's clear he's done it without thinking, because we both immediately let out the ha-ha-ha of the "oop, that's not going to happen" laugh.
"Is it weird that you're not as unpleasant as I initially thought?"
he asks. I use his monosyllabic tactic against him. "Yes." He rolls his eyes. Over Ethan's shoulder, the Molokini crater comes fully into view. It is vibrant green, crescent-shaped, and stunning. Even from here, I can see that the clear blue bay is dotted with boats just like ours. "Look." I nod to the horizon. We aren't lost at sea. He lets out a quiet, "Wow." And there, for a single breath, we give in to a really lovely moment of enjoying something together, until Ethan decides to ruin it.
"I hope you don't drown out there."
I smile down at him. "If I do, the husband is always a suspect."
"I take back my unpleasant comment."
Another body joins our awkward foursome on the roof. The snuba instructor, Nick, a sun-streaked blonde guy with over-tanned skin and bright white teeth, who calls himself an island boy, but I am fairly sure was born in Idaho or Missouri.
"Who plans to snuba and who plans to snorkel?"
he asks us. I toss a hopeful look across the deck to Sophie and Billy, who have mercifully detached their faces from each other, but they both enthusiastically shout, "Snuba!" So I guess we're still stuck with them underwater. We confirm that we're planning to snuba too, and Ethan hauls me up with apparently zero effort, using arms that are remarkably strong. He sets me down an arm's length away in front of him, standing behind me. It's a beat before he seems to remember we should stay in newlywed levels of constant contact, so he folds his arms across my chest, jerking my back against his front. I feel the way we're both already clammy in the heat, and how we immediately suction together. "Gross," I groan. "You're so sweaty." His forearm smashes against my boobs. I step backward onto his foot. "Oops," I lie. "Sorry." He slides his chest against my back, back and forth, intentionally contaminating me with his man sweat. He is the worst. So why am I fighting the urge to laugh? Sophie sidles up next to him.
"Got your lucky penny?"
she asks, and I wish I could explain the tiny, jealous monster that rears up inside my chest. She is engaged to someone else. Those little inside jokes and couple-y secrets don't belong to her anymore. Before I can say anything, Ethan slides his arm down, over my chest and across my front, so he's pressing a flattened hand to my stomach, holding me tight.
"Don't need it anymore. I've got her."
Sophie lets out a highly fake, "Aw," and then looks at me. And wow, it is a loaded, silent exchange. In our heads, we are having a dance-off. She is sizing me up, maybe trying to connect the dots from how Ethan went from dating her to marrying me. I assume that she ended things. Otherwise, he probably wouldn't care so much about making a show of having a new wife. And I wonder whether the distaste I read on her face is about Ethan moving on so easily, or about him moving on with someone who is nothing like her at all. I lean back against him in an impulsive show of solidarity, and I wonder if he registers that his hips arch subtly against my back in response, an unconscious thrust. Inside my torso, there is an explosion of traitorous butterflies. A few seconds have passed since he suggested I'm his good luck charm, and it feels too late to say that it's really the opposite, that with my luck, I'll get a sliver on the side of the boat, bleed into the ocean, and attract a school of hungry sharks.
"You all ready to have some fun?"
Nick asks, breaking into my frozen silence. Sophie lets out a sorority girl, "Hell yeah!" and high-fives Billy. I expect a forced fist bump from Ethan in response, so am surprised when I feel his lips come in for a soft landing on my cheek.
"Hell yeah," he whispers into my ear, laughing quietly.
Nick gets us suited up and fitted with flippers and face masks. The masks only cover our eyes and noses. Because we'll be going deeper than with regular snorkeling, we're also given mouthpieces we can breathe through that are attached via a long tube to an oxygen tank on a small raft that we'll pull along the surface above us as we swim. Each tank-raft combination can support two divers, so of course Ethan and I are paired up, which also means we are essentially tethered together. When we slide into the water and reach for our oxygen nozzles, I can see Ethan investigating the mouthpiece, trying to estimate how many people have slobbered on it and how reliably it's been cleaned between clients. After glancing at me and registering my complete lack of sympathy for his hygiene crisis, he takes a deep breath and shoves it in, giving Nick an ambivalent thumbs up. We take hold of the raft that carries our shared oxygen tank. With a final glance at each other over the top, we duck down, disoriented for a beat of breathing through the respirator and seeing through the mask, and, true to habit, we try to swim in opposite directions. Ethan's head pops up above the water's surface again, and he jerks his head behind him impatiently, indicating which way he wants to go. I give in, letting him lead. Underwater, I am immediately consumed with everything around us. The black, yellow, and white kihi-kihi dart by. Cornet fish slice through our field of vision, sleek and silver. The closer we get to the reef, the more unreal it becomes. With eyes wide behind his mask, Ethan points to a brilliant school of reddish soldier fish as it passes another large mass of exuberant yellow tang. Bubbles erupt from his respirator like confetti. I don't know how it happens, but one minute I'm struggling to swim faster, and the next, Ethan's hand is around mine, helping me move toward a small cluster of gray-dotted oily. It's so quiet down here,
I've honestly never felt this sort of weightless, silent calm, and certainly never in his presence. Soon Ethan and I are swimming completely in sync, our feet kicking lazily behind us. He points to things he sees. I do the same. There are no words, no verbal jabs. There is no desire to smack him or poke his eyes out. There is only the confusing truth that holding his hand down here isn't just tolerable. It's nice. Back near the boat, we emerge soggy and breathless. Adrenaline dances through me. I want to tell Ethan we should do this every single day of the vacation. But as soon as our masks are pulled up and we are helped from the water, reality returns. Our eyes meet, and whatever he was planning to say dies a similar death in his throat. "That was fun," I say simply. "Yeah." He peels off the wetsuit vest, handing it to Nick, and then steps forward when he sees I'm struggling with my zipper. I'm shaking because it's chilly, so I let him unzip me and work very hard to not notice how big his hands are and how capably he works the stuck zipper free. "Thanks." I bend, rummaging in my bag for my dry clothes. I am not charmed by him. I am not. "Where should I change?" Nick winces.
"We only have one bathroom, and it tends to get pretty crowded when we start to turn back and everyone's cocktails are hitting their bladder. I'd suggest heading down there soon, but you two are welcome to go in together."
"Together?" I ask. I look down toward the narrow steps to the bathroom and notice that people are already starting to gather their things to go use it themselves.
"Nothing you haven't seen before," Ethan says with a wicked grin.
I send a militia of harmful thoughts at him. He soon regrets being so cavalier. The bathroom is the size of a broom closet, a very small broom closet with a very slippery floor. We crowd into the soggy space, clutching our clothes to our chest. Down here, it feels like the boat is in the middle of a storm. We are victims of every tiny lurch and lean.
"You first," he says.
"Why me first? You go first."
"We can both change and get this over with," he says. "You face the door, I'll face the wall."
I hear the wet splat of his board shorts just as I'm working my bikini bottom down my shivering legs, and I'm highly aware that Ethan's butt is probably only inches away from mine. I experience a moment of pure terror when I imagine how mortifying it would be for our cold, wet butt cheeks to touch. A little panicky, I scramble for my towel and slip, my right foot coming out from under me in a shallow pool of water near the sink. My foot hooks on something. Ethan shouts in surprise, and I realize that something was Ethan's shin. After his hand slaps loudly against the wall, he loses his balance too. My back hits the floor, and with a splat, Ethan lands on top of me. If there's pain, I am too distracted by the chaos to register it, and there is a horrified beat of silence where we both realize what's happened. We are completely naked, wet, and clammy, and a tangle of naked arms and legs and parts in the most mortifying game of Twister anyone has ever experienced.
"Oh my God, get off me!" I shriek. "What the fuck, Olive? You knocked me over!"
He attempts to stand, but the floor is slippery and in motion, which means he keeps falling back down on me as he scrambles to find footing. Once we're up, it's clear we both want to die of mortification. We give up on the facing the door or facing the wall in favor of speed. There is no way for us to do this without flashes of butt and boobs and all manner of dangly things, but at this point, we don't care. Ethan scrambles to pull up a clean pair of shorts, but it takes me about four times as long to stutter pull my clothing up over my wet body. Thankfully, he's dressed relatively quickly and turns away, pressing his forehead against the wall, eyes closed as I wrestle with my bra and shirt. "I want you to know," I tell him as I tug it down my torso, "and I'm sure you hear this a lot, but that was by far the worst sexual experience of my life."
"I feel like we should have used protection."
I turn to confirm what I've heard in his voice, repressed laughter again, and catch him smiling, still facing the wall.
"You can turn around now," I say. "I'm decent." "Are you ever really, though?"
he asks, turning and blushing and grinning at me. It's a lot to take in. I wait for the annoyed reaction, but it doesn't arrive. Instead, I realize with surprise that seeing his real smile aimed my way feels like getting a paycheck.
You make a good point.
He seems equally surprised that I haven't snarked back at him, and reaches past me to unlock the door.
I'm feeling queasy. Let's get out of here.
We emerge, red-faced for reasons that are immediately misinterpreted, and Ethan gets a high five from a couple of men we've never met. He follows me to the bar, where I order a margarita and he orders a ginger drink to help his stomach. One glance at him tells me that he wasn't kidding about feeling queasy. He looks green. We find seats inside, out of the sun but near a window, and he leans forward, pressing his head to the pane, trying to breathe. I blame this moment right here, because it creates a tiny fracture in his role as nemesis. A true nemesis doesn't show weakness, and for sure, when I reach out to rub his back, a true nemesis wouldn't lean into it, moaning in quiet relief. He wouldn't shift so that I could reach him more easily, and he certainly wouldn't scoot down the bench and rest his head in my lap, staring up at me in gratitude when I gently rake my fingers through his hair, soothing. Ethan and I are starting to build more of these good moments than bad. It sends the balance swinging into an unfamiliar direction, and I think I really like it, which makes me incredibly uneasy.
I still hate you, I tell him, pushing a dark curl of hair off his forehead.
He nods.
I know you do.
Chapter 9. Once we're back on solid ground, most of his color returns, but rather than push our luck, or risk having to dine with Sophie and Billy, we decide to turn in early and order room service. Although he takes his dinner in the living room, and I take mine in the bedroom, it occurs to me somewhere between my first bite of ravioli and my fourth episode of Glow that I could have sent Ethan back to the hotel and gone out myself. I could have done 100 different things without even leaving the hotel grounds, and yet here I am, back in the room at night because Ethan had a rough day. At least now I'm only a room away if he needs someone. Needs someone like me? I want to point at and tease myself and this new tenderness for thinking Ethan would seek me out as a source of comfort at any time, other than when we're trapped on a boat. He wouldn't. And that's not what we're here for, anyway. But as soon as I start shadow-boxing myself into a mental froth about needing to enjoy my vacation and not slide into liking this guy who has only been quasi-friendly to me in paradise but never in real life, I remember what it felt like underwater at the crater, how his front felt all along my back up on the deck of the boat, how it felt to run my fingers through his hair. My heartbeat goes all haywire thinking about how his breathing started to sync with the pace of my nails scratching lightly over his scalp. And then I burst out laughing, remembering our naked twister in the bathroom of doom.
Are you laughing about the bathroom? He calls from the other room.
I will be laughing about the bathroom until the end of time.
Same.
I find myself smiling in the direction of the living room and realize that staying firmly on Team I Hate Ethan Thomas is going to be more work than it may be worth. Morning comes to the island in a slow, blurry brightening of the sky. Yesterday morning, the cool overnight humidity was gradually burned off by sunshine, but not today. Today it rains. It's chilly as I shuffle out of the bedroom in search of coffee. The suite is still pretty dark, but Ethan is awake. He's stretched along the full length of the sofa bed with a thick book open in front of him. He wisely leaves me alone until the caffeine has had time to work its way into my system. Eventually, I make my way into the living room.
What are your plans today?
I'm still in my pajamas, but feeling much more human.
You're looking at it.
He closes the book, resting it on his chest. The image is immediately filed in my brain cyclopedia as an Ethan posture and subcategorized as surprisingly hot,
but preferably at the pool with an alcoholic beverage in my hand.
In unison, we frown at the window. Fat drops shake the palm fronds outside, and rain runs softly down the balcony door.
I wanted to paddleboard. I wilt. He picks the book back up.
Doesn't look like that'll happen.
My knee-jerk instinct is to glare at him, but he's not even looking at me anymore. I grab the hotel guidebook from the TV stand. There has to be something I can do in the rain. Ethan and I are capable of spending time together outside, but there would be bloodshed if we both hung around in this suite all day. I pull the phone closer and open the directory in front of me. Ethan moves to my side and reads the list of activities over my shoulder. His presence is already, suddenly, like an enormous cast of heat moving around the room, and now he's standing shoulder to shoulder with me. My voice grows wavery as I read down the list. Ziplining, helicopter, hike, submarine, kayaking, off-roading, bike ride. He stops me before I can get to the next one.
Ooh, paintball.
I look at him blankly. Paintball always struck me as something that gun-obsessed, testosterone-fueled frat boys did. Ethan doesn't really seem the type.
You've played paintball?
No, he says.
But it looks fun. How hard can it be?
That feels like a dangerous taunt to the universe, Ethan.
The universe doesn't care about my paintball game, Olive.
My dad gave me a flare gun once when I took a road trip in college with a boyfriend. It went off in the trunk and set our luggage on fire while we were swimming in a river. We had to go to a local Walmart to buy clothes. Keep in mind, all we had were our wet bathing suits. And it was this tiny town, like seriously just populated by the creepy people from Deliverance. I have never felt more like someone's future dinner than I did walking through the aisles trying to find new underwear. He studies me for several long seconds.
You have a lot of stories like this, don't you?
You have no idea. I glance at the window again. But seriously, if it's been raining all night, won't it be all muddy? He leans against the counter.
So you'd only want to be covered in paint, but definitely not mud.
I think the goal is to not get covered in paint.
You are incapable of not arguing with me, he says, and it is so aggravating. Weren't you just arguing with me about being covered in paint but not mud?
He growls, but I see him fighting a smile. I point across the room. Why don't you go over to the minibar and work out that aggravation? Ethan leans back in, closer than before. He smells unbelievably good, and it is unbelievably annoying.
Let's do paintball today.
Turning the page, I shake my head. Hard nope.
Come on, he wheedles. You can pick what we do after.
Why do you even want to hang out with me? We don't like each other. He grins.
You are clearly not thinking about this strategically. You'll get to shoot me with paint pellets.
A video game montage scrolls through my head. My gun spitting out a stream of Skittle green paintballs, green splatters landing in bursts all across the front of Ethan's vest. And finally, the kill shot. A giant green splat right over his groin.
You know what? I'll go ahead and make us some reservations.
The hotel arranges a bus to take us to the paintball field. We stop in front of an industrial building fronted by a parking lot on one side, with forest all around. It isn't outright raining, more like a steady, misty drizzle. And, oh yeah, it's muddy. Inside, the office is small and smells like, you guessed it, dirt and paint. A big and tall white dude in a hybrid floral-slash-camouflage Hawaiian shirt with a name tag that reads Hog stands behind the counter to welcome us. He and Ethan discuss the various options for play, but I'm barely listening. Above the counter, the walls are covered with helmets and body armor, goggles and gloves. A poster hangs next to another door and reads, Stay calm and reload. There are also guns. Lots of them. It's probably a bad time to realize I've never held a gun before, let alone shot one. Hog moves back to a room, and Ethan turns to me, pointing to a wall with a list of names and rankings, players who have won some sort of paintball war.
This seems pretty intense.
I point to the other side of the room,
and a sign that says, "Warning, my balls might hit you in the face." The word I think Hogg was going for is classy. I pick up an empty paintball gun made to resemble a rifle. Do you remember that scene in 9 to 5 where Jane Fonda is dressed in safari gear and goes through the office looking for Mr. Hart?
No,
Ethan says, tilting his head up at the gear on the walls, sweetly oblivious.
Why?
I grin when he looks down at me. No reason. Pointing to the wall, I ask, "Have you ever shot a gun before?" Minnesota has some pretty avid sport hunters, and who knows, maybe Ethan is one of them. He nods and then falls silent while my brain goes down a crazy tunnel, imagining the tragedy of a zebra head mounted on his living room wall. Or a lion. Oh my God, what if he's one of those horrible people who goes to Africa and hunts rhinos? My fury at this version of Ethan Thomas starts to return in its full, heated glory. But then he adds,
"Just at the shooting range with Dane a couple times, though. It's more his thing than mine."
He does a double take when he sees my face.
"What?"
I pull in a hulking lung full of air, realizing I just did what I always seem to do, which is to immediately dive into the worst-case scenario. "Before you clarified that, I had an image of you in a safari hat with your foot propped up on a dead giraffe."
"Stop that," he says. "Gross."
I shrug, wincing.
"It's just how I'm built." "Just get to know me, then. Give me the benefit of the doubt."
He says these words calmly, almost offhand, and then frowns down at a belt buckle on the counter that reads, "The first rule of gun safety? Don't piss me off." But I'm still reeling in the deep enormity of his insight, and how exposed I suddenly feel, when Hogg returns, thick arms loaded with gear. He hands us each a pair of camouflage coveralls and gloves, a helmet, and a set of goggles. The gun is plastic and very lightweight, with a long barrel and a plastic hopper affixed to the top where the paintballs are stored. But everything else is heavy. I try to imagine running in this and can't. Ethan inspects his gear and leans over the counter.
"Do you have any, protection?"
"Protection?"
The tops of Ethan's ears turn red, and I know in that moment that he is a mind reader and saw my imaginary green paint splats all over his junk. He stares at Hogg meaningfully, but Hogg just shakes his head with a laugh.
"Don't worry about it, big fella. You're gonna be just fine."
I pat his shoulder.
"Yeah, big fella. I've got your back."
The game takes place on 5 acres of dense forest. Dozens of wooden shelters lead off into the tree line, bundles of logs are scattered for cover, and a few bridges stretch overhead, spanning the length between trees. We're instructed to gather, along with other players, beneath a large metal overhang. The rain is more mist than droplets now, but there's a damp chill in the air, and I feel my shoulders inch up toward my ears beneath my baggy coveralls. Ethan glances down at me, and from behind his goggles, his eyes crinkle in mirth. He's barely stopped laughing since I stepped out of the changing stall.
"You look like a cartoon," he says.
"I mean, it's super flattering on you, too," I shoot back.
But as far as comebacks go, it's pretty limp given that Ethan actually does look pretty great in the camo paintball getup. He has this sexy soldier thing happening that I did not expect to be into, but apparently I am.
"Elmer Fudd,"
he adds.
"Hunting wabbits."
"Would you shut up?"
"You're like a pathetic Private Benjamin."
"Private Benjamin is already pretty pathetic." Ethan is gleeful.
"I know."
Blessed be. Our instructor Bob approaches. He is short but solid and paces in front of our group like a general readying his troops. One immediately gets the sense that Bob wanted to be a cop, but it didn't work out. He tells us we'll be playing a version called Deathmatch. It sounds both great and terrible. Our group of about 20 is split up into two teams, and we essentially just run around shooting each other until everyone on the team is eliminated.
"Each player has 5 lives," he says,
eyeing each of us shrewdly as he passes.
Once you're hit, you'll lock your weapon, attach the barrel cover, and return to camp.
He points to a small building wrapped in protective fencing. A scribbled sign reading Base Camp hangs overhead.
You'll stay there until your wait time is up, then return to the game.
Ethan leans in, his words warm against my ear.
No hard feelings when I take you out immediately, right?
I look up at him. His hair is damp from the humidity, and he's biting back a grin. He's literally biting his lip, and for a breathy moment, I want to reach out and tug it free. But I'm mostly glad he doesn't assume that we're going to be working together today.
Don't threaten me with a good time, I say. There are some hard and fast rules, Bob continues. Safety first. If you think it's dumb, don't do it. Goggles on, always. Anytime your gun is not in use, you are to keep it locked and the barrel covered. That includes if you've been hit and are exiting the field.
Someone claps just behind me, and I look over my shoulder. A tall, heavy-set bald man is nodding along with the instructor and practically vibrating with energy. He's also shirtless, which seems odd, and wearing a utility belt with canisters of extra paint and supplies. I share a quizzical look with Ethan.
You've played before? Ethan surmises. As often as I can, the man says. Clancy.
He reaches out, shaking Ethan's hand.
Ethan.
He points to me, and I wave.
Her name's Skittle.
Actually, I say, glaring up at him, it's...
You must be pretty good, then,
Ethan says to Clancy. Clancy folds hairy arms across his chest.
I've hit Prestige in Call of Duty about 12 times, so I'll let you be the judge.
I can't resist. If you don't mind my asking, why aren't you wearing a shirt? Won't it hurt to be hit?
The pain is part of the experience,
Clancy explains. Ethan nods like this makes a hell of a lot of sense, but I know him well enough by now to see the amusement in his eyes.
Any tips for newbies? I ask.
Clancy is clearly delighted to have been asked.
Use the trees. They're better than flat surfaces because you can move around them. Real slinky. For lookout, always bend at the waist.
He illustrates for us, popping up and down a few times.
Keeps the rest of your body protected. Don't, and you'll know what it feels like to take a powerball to your biscuits at 270 feet per second.
He blinks over to me.
No offense, Skittle.
I wave him off. No one likes being hit in the biscuits. He nods, continuing.
Most important, never, ever go prone. Hit the ground, and you're a dead man.
People around us clap as Bob finishes and begins to divide us up into two teams. Ethan and I deflate a little when we both end up on Team Thunder. This means, sadly, I will not be hunting him through the forest. His dismay deepens when he sees the opposing team, a small handful of adults and a group of 7 14-year-old boys here for a birthday party.
Hold up,
Ethan says, motioning in their direction.
We can't shoot at a bunch of kids.
One with braces and a backward cap steps forward.
Who are you calling a kid? You scared, Grandpa?
Ethan grins easily.
If your mom drove you here, you're a kid.
His friends snicker in the background, egging him on.
Actually, your mom drove me here, took my dick in the back seat.
At this, Ethan lets out a bursting laugh.
Yeah, that sounds exactly like something Barb Thomas would do.
He turns away.
Look at him hiding like a little bitch,
the kid says. Bob steps in and levels a glare at the teen.
Watch your mouth.
He turns to Ethan.
Save it for the field. I think Bob just gave me permission to take out that little asshole,
Ethan says in wonder, lowering his goggles.
Ethan, he's scrawny.
Means I won't waste much ammo on him.
I put a hand on his arm. You may be taking this a little too seriously. He grins over at me and winks so I can see he's just having fun. Something flutters alive in my ribcage. Playful Ethan is the newest evolution in my traveling partner, and I am completely here for it.
I feel like I should have paid closer attention to the rules.
Ethan is panting at my side, mud-streaked and splattered with purple paint. We both are. Spoiler alert, paintball fucking hurts.
Is there a time limit for this game?
He pulls out his phone and starts Googling, groaning when the service is spotty. I roll my head back against the wooden shelter and squint up into the sky. Our team's original plan was to divide up and hide near the bunkers, assigning a few defenders to stay in the neutral territory and cover advancing attackers. I'm not really sure where that plan went wrong, but at some point there was an ill-advised ambush and there are only four of us remaining. Everyone on the opposing team, including all the teenage shit-talkers, is still in. Now Ethan and I are trapped behind a dilapidated wall, being hunted from all sides by children who are way more cutthroat than we expected.
Are they still out there? I ask.
Ethan stretches to see over the barricade and immediately drops back down again.
Yeah. How many? I only saw two. I don't think they know where we are.
He crawls to look out the other side and quickly gives up.
One of them is pretty far away. The other is just hanging out on the bridge. I say we wait. Someone will come by and draw his attention sooner or later, and we can run for that stand of trees over there.
A few seconds pass, filled with the sound of distant screams and the occasional eruption of paintballs. This is about as far from the real world as I can imagine. I can't believe I'm enjoying myself.
Maybe we should try to outrun them, I say.
I don't relish the thought of taking more paintballs to the ass, but it's cold and damp where we're hunkered, and my thighs are starting to do the shaky cramp dance.
We might be able to get away. You're surprisingly not terrible at this.
He glances at me and then squints back out to the woods.
You have the agility of a boulder. We should probably stay put.
I reach out and kick him, tickled when he grunts in feigned pain. Because we're just squatting here, hiding from a group of aggressive, pubescent boys, I'm tempted to strike up conversation, but hesitate, immediately second-guessing myself. Do I want to get to know Ethan? I used to think I already knew the most important thing about him, that he's a judgmental dude who has a thing against curvy women eating high-calorie state fair food. But I've also learned that, one, he does something mathy for work. Two, to my knowledge, he's had one girlfriend in the time since I first met him 2.5 years ago. Three, he is very good at frowning, but also great at smiling. Four, he insists he doesn't mind sharing food. He just does not eat at buffets. Five, he often takes his younger brother on expensive, adventurous trips. The rest of the list slides into my thoughts, uninvited. Six, he's actually hilarious. Seven, he gets seasick. Eight, he seems to be made of muscle. Must confirm somehow that there are actual organs inside his torso. Nine, he's competitive, but not in a scary way. 10. He can be exceedingly charming if bribed with a comfortable mattress. 11. He thinks I always look great. 12. He remembered my shirt from the third time we met. 13. From what I can tell, he has a nice penis in those pants. Why am I thinking about Ethan's penis? Super gross. Obviously, I came here with what I thought was a pretty clear picture of who he was, but I have to admit that version seems to be crumbling.
Well, since we've got some time to kill, I say, and move from more of a squat to a sit, can I ask you a totally personal and invasive question?
He rubs at the spot on his leg.
If it means you won't kick me again, yes.
What happened between you and Sophie? Also, how did you two happen in the first place? She's very, 90210, and you seem more, Big Bang Theory.
Ethan closes his eyes and then leans to look outside the barricade.
Maybe we should just run for it.
I pull him back. We have one more life each, and I'm using you as a human shield if we leave.
Talk.
He takes a deep breath and blows his cheeks out as he exhales.
We were together for about 2 years, he says. I was living in Chicago at the time, if you remember, and went to the Twin Cities to visit Dane. I stopped by his office, and she worked in the same building. I saw her in the parking lot. She dropped a box full of papers, and I helped her pick them up.
That sounds like an incredibly cliched beginning to a movie. To my surprise, he laughs at this. And you moved there? I ask. Just like that?
It wasn't just like that.
He reaches to wipe some mud from his face, and I like the gesture, the way I can tell it comes from vulnerability during this conversation more than vanity. In a weird burst of awareness, I register this is the first time I'm really talking to Ethan.
It was after a few months, and I'd had a standing job offer in the cities for a while. Once I was back in Minneapolis, we decided, you know, why not? It made sense to move in together.
I pull my jaw closed once I register that it's been hanging open. Wow. It takes me a few months to decide if I like a new shampoo enough to stick with it. Ethan laughs, but it's not a particularly happy sound, and makes something squeeze inside my chest. What happened? I ask.
She didn't cheat or anything that I know of. We got an apartment in Loring Park, and things were good. Really good.
He meets my eyes for a brief pulse, almost like he's not sure I'll believe him.
I was going to propose on the 4th of July.
I lift a brow in question at the specific date, and he reaches up to scratch his neck, embarrassed.
I thought it might be cool to do it while the fireworks were going off.
Ah, a grand gesture. I'm not sure I would have pegged you as the type. He laugh groans.
I got that far, if that's what you're wondering. A friend was having a barbecue, and we went over to his place, hung out for a while, then I took her up to the roof and proposed. She cried and we hugged, but it registered later that she never actually said yes. Afterward, we went back inside and started to help him clean up. Sophie said she wasn't feeling great and would meet me at home. When I got there, she was gone.
Wait, you mean like gone, gone? He nods.
Yep, all her stuff was gone. She'd packed up and left me a note on a dry erase board in our kitchen.
My brows come together. A dry erase board?
I don't think we should get married. Sorry. That's what she said. Sorry. Like she was telling me she splattered tomato sauce on my favorite shirt. You know, I cleaned that board 100 times, and those damn words never went away. And I don't mean that in a metaphorical sense. She used a Sharpie, not a dry erase marker. And it literally stained the words into the board.
Oof, that's awful. You know, you can actually get rid of permanent marker if you go over the words with a dry erase one. Not that that's particularly helpful now. He blinks at me.
I'll remember that for next time.
I can't believe you grand gestured, and she dry erase boarded you. God, no offense, but Sophie is a giant dick. This time when he laughs, it's louder, lighter, and the smile reaches his eyes.
None taken. It was a dick thing to do, even if I'm glad she did it. I thought we were happy, but the truth is, our relationship lived on the surface. I don't think it would have worked much longer.
He pauses.
I just wanted to be settled, maybe. I think I grand gestured for the wrong person. I realize I need someone I can talk to, and she doesn't really like to go too deep.
This doesn't entirely mesh with my image of him as a jet-setting daredevil, but then again, neither did the vision of him on the plane, clutching the armrests. Now I have new Ethan facts to add to the list. 14. Doesn't know how to Google cleaning tips.
15, he's introspective. 16, as much as he would probably deny it now, he's a romantic. I wonder whether there are two very different sides of Ethan, or I've just never looked much deeper than what Dane and Amy have told me about him all this time. Remembering the way he froze when he saw Sophie on our way back to the hotel, I ask, had you seen each other since then? Before
dinner with Charlie and Molly?
Nope. She still lives in Minneapolis. I know that, but I never saw her around. I definitely didn't know she was engaged.
How do you feel about it?
He taps his finger on the edge of a stick and stares off into the distance.
I'm not sure. You know what I realized on the boat? We broke up in July. She said they met while he was stocking school supplies. That's August? Maybe September? She waited a month.